Welcome back to Topical Currents. Good afternoon. I'm Bonnie Berman, and Joseph Cooper is still recovering from his severe back injury and truly appreciates your kind wishes. Brad Meltzer has become a household name for his fiction, his political thrillers, nonfiction, comic books, hosting Decoded with Brad Meltzer, which airs on the History Channel. He's written Heroes for My Son, Heroes for My Daughter, but those were really more for parents. Now Brad is writing a series of children's picture books, Ordinary People Change the World. They're illustrated by Christopher Eliopoulos, and we've already seen I Am Amelia Earhart and I Am Abraham Lincoln. Coming soon, I Am Albert Einstein, I Am Jackie Robinson. But I Am Rosa Parks was just published last month, close to the 50th anniversary of the passage of the Civil Rights Act. Brad calls these kid-friendly books My Heart in book form, and Brad joins us in the studio. Welcome, Brad Meltzer. It's always a pleasure to see you.
Always great to see you.
Thank you. So what do you mean when you say My Heart in book form?
You know, I wrote these books for my kids because I was tired of them looking at reality TV show stars and loudmouth athletes and thinking that that's a hero. And I tell my kids all the time that is fame, and being famous is very different than being a hero. And so when I started looking around, I thought, I have so many better heroes for them that I can give them. And when I say it's my heart in book form, it's like, in a strange odd way, I love when people read my thrillers. I love when they watch me on TV. There's nothing I like better than sitting in my house, watching myself on television while reading my own books and saying, Meltzer, you've done it again. But the truth
no
is...
No ego here.
Right? But the truth is all kidding aside, this is the book that I would hope would be my legacy, because this gives kids real true heroes at a time when we're starving for heroes. And I can give a kid... I'm suddenly getting letters from little kids saying... I want to have a birthday cake. They sent me a picture of their birthday cake with Abraham Lincoln on it. Mm. A little girl dressed like Amelia Earhart. I had a little African-American girl I just got a picture of reading I Am Rosa Parks, and her father wrote, she asked me, did this really happen? Did this really happen? And to me, this is what I believe. These books are what I stand for.
I was going to get to this in a minute, but I love how you find a simple fact about each of these heroes as children that foreshadows who they became as adults.
Yeah, you know, when we started, I can tell my daughter that Amelia Earhart flew across the Atlantic Ocean. And my daughter would say to me, big deal, Dad, everyone flies there today. Mm-hmm. But if I tell her that when Amelia Earhart was 7 years old, she built a homemade roller coaster in her backyard, that she took a wooden crate, she put roller skating wheels on the bottom, she shoved it to the roof of her tool shed, this is a true story, gets on the top of the tool shed, gets in the crate, rolls down on the roller skates to the bottom, crashes into the ground, gets up and says, that was incredible. Now my daughter goes, Dad, she's amazing, she's fun, she's just like me. And now Amelia Earhart is alive again, and my daughter's interested in her, and now she cares. And to me, that's what these books do. They always start with a story from when the people are little, and then you see how that absolutely leads to where they are later in life. Amelia Earhart on that day, that was the first time she ever flew. She said, I want to do that again.
That's really incredible. And these are things, I mean, I hate to say that there was a lot I learned about Rosa Parks from your little book. But before we get to Rosa Parks, since we're talking about the others, let's talk about the incident with Abraham Lincoln that was just, it struck me, it touches my heart because I'm an animal lover. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we found this one thanks to one of the Abraham Lincoln Research Centers. All these biographies will show you the stories of Lincoln when he's older, and of course, what do we tell our kids? He freed the slaves. Again, beautiful fact.
Grew up in a log cabin.
Right, grew up in a log cabin, was poor as could be. We all know those details. But when I tell my son the true story that when Abraham Lincoln was 10 years old, he used to love animals, and he came upon a group of boys playing with turtles. He loved turtles, so he races over all excited. He sees they're not playing with the turtles. What they're doing is they're putting hot coals on the backs of the turtles to make them run faster. They're torturing the turtles. Mm. And now young Abraham Lincoln, at 10 years old, has to decide what to do. And when you're 10 years old, or you're 40 years old, or you're 70 years old, sometimes it's hard to do the right thing. But someone has to. And in that moment, Abraham Lincoln, as a boy, says, take the coal off the turtles. They're like, what? Take the coal off the turtles. And stands up for them, stands up to those bullies. And again, I tell my son that story, and my young son says to me, Dad, I want to be like him. And that's where I Am Abraham Lincoln comes to life as a book. And then you can tell him about the slaves, and then you can tell him about right. him being president. But now the kids can relate to him in a way that they never could before.
You call this series Ordinary People Change the World, but these individuals are anything but ordinary. So is it because you tell us about when they were ordinary and then they became famous?
You know, it's interesting. I almost take issue with that. I got a review recently that said, you know, Albert Einstein is not ordinary. And I know that there are things that, of course, they achieve that are incredible, but we are all born the same.
We
are all regular people.
We're just all people.
That's it. We are all, I mean, show me any life and I will show you weakness and I will show you greatness. You show me any of these people and I will show you weakness and I will show you greatness. And to me, that's my core belief. I believe ordinary people change the world. I don't care where you went to school or how much money you make. I believe in regular people and their ability to affect change in this world.
Do you think every kid, are you telling them that you can become a hero in your own way?
Well, I think, you know, to be a hero, let's define what it is. What do you have to do? Do you have to start a bus boycott? Do you have to free the slaves? Do you have to fly across the Atlantic? To me, that's not the definition of a hero.
Right.
The definition of a hero is you have to help someone. And we can all do that. And that's what all of these people do as kids, as adults. And sometimes they help you like Amelia Earhart by inspiring you. Right, Amelia Earhart doesn't help anyone. She's helping herself. She's going to fly across, set records. She has no idea that decades later, that little girls, little boys are going to want to be just like her. They inspire us, and in that way, she helps us.
Right.
Some people help more directly. Mother Teresa goes in the streets, helps people directly.
Right.
But either way, you have to help someone, and anyone can help someone.
We're speaking with Brad Meltzer about his series of children's books, and Ordinary People Change the World, and his latest, just published, I Am Rosa Parks, well, last month, and they're all illustrated by Christopher Eliopoulos. Let's talk about Rosa Parks and that incident. She was quite a fighter when she was 11 years old.
Yeah, you know, I found this story. You know, we've turned Rosa Parks, sadly, into this little old lady, right? She's like, she's shown with glasses as if she's with a walker. When Rosa Parks was 11 years old, she was walking around and a boy came on roller skates, a little boy, and shoves her down. Rosa Parks, as a little girl, pops back up. She shoves him back. Now, at the moment, this is the key detail, is the boy was white. Rosa Parks, of course, was black. And immediately, the boy's mother comes racing over and says, "What did you do pushing my son? I'm going to have you thrown in jail forever." And Rosa Parks, in that moment, anyone else, you know, you're 11 years old, you go running when an adult starts screaming at you. She stands up to that woman, stands up for herself, most importantly, and says, "Your son started this. I'm just trying to get him not to do that again." And in that moment, Rosa Parks will tell you that never again did that mother or that little boy ever bother her again. And I want my sons to hear that story. I want my daughter to hear that story. And we need to see what happens when you stand up to the bully.
And tell us about your sons, because after they read this, they actually had cause to
use it. Yeah, no, absolutely. In fact, it was interesting. I always test these books out on my own children, because I have to. I have to see what they're reacting to. I don't know what a 5-year-old or an 8-year-old or a 12-year-old is going to react to. And when my older son read the book and heard that story about Rosa Parks, a couple months ago, my youngest son was being bullied in the cafeteria.
How old was he?
He was 6 years old.
Okay.
And he was just being told where to sit, and some kid was pushing him around. And my older son heard the story and says out of nowhere, says, "You need to be like Rosa Parks. You need to stand up to the bully." Mm-hmm. And my younger son says, "You're right. I need to be like Rosa Parks." And my wife is telling me the story with tears in her eyes. And I'm hearing this, and I'm going, this is what the book's about. Oh my gosh, it worked in a way that I never, ever anticipated. And of course, it's a bully story, but they took it on their own because that's what kids can relate to. They may never have to organize a bus boycott. They may never have to ignite a civil rights movement, but they know what it means to stand up every day and see that bully in the cafeteria.
And the other thing about Rosa Parks, about not wanting to drink out of the black fountain, there were colored fountains, and I love that when you said she looked for colored water. She thought it meant there was going to be colored water coming out of the fountain.
Yeah, Chris Eliopoulos, our artist, what I love about him is it's easy to do funny, it's easy to do cute. What it's hard to do is heart and heartbreak.
Yeah.
And I heard that story that Rosa Parks used to look at water fountains, and when they said colored, she thought it meant truly colors would come out of it. So he draws a picture of the water fountain with a rainbow coming out of it. And of course, that's not what comes out of her fountain. Colored means something very different. And my kids, they got that. They literally were, a friend of mine sent me a note that said, you know, as I told you, did this really happen? Then another one sent me a note and said, "When did this happen, Dad? Tell me when." And our kids need to learn that history. You know, we think that history, so many people think that history is a bunch of dates and facts you memorize. That's not what history is at all. History is a selection process, and it chooses every single one of us every single day. And the only question is, do you hear the call? And I am Rosa Parks. That's the call.
If you want to speak to Brad, well, maybe we could take a couple of calls at 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576, or email radio at WLRN.org. Brad, the other thing that I certainly didn't know, and I don't know if most people do, is that that bus driver that she actually stood up to, or when she got arrested, was the same bus driver who threw her off the bus another time.
I know, it's the number one thing people have been writing to me about. They're like, I never knew that. I learned it in a children's book. And when Rosa Parks, we all know the famous story, sits down on the bus, gets arrested, she actually knew the bus driver. He years earlier, she got on the bus, she entered through the front door because the back door was packed with people, and he said, get off my bus. And so when she faced him that second time, she wasn't just on a day standing up on a whim. She was standing up to someone she knew. She was again standing up to the bully. And it's amazing to me. I'm fascinated by the idea that history has turned her into this old, as I said, this kind of old, meek woman. She was feisty. I mean, she was an old seamstress. But you know how old Rosa Parks was when she stood up to the bus driver? 42.
Which is so young now.
So young, right? Way younger. I mean, I love, right? I mean, basically, she's like a teenager.
42 is
right?
Exactly.
But the truth was, is she's in her prime. You know, she's not just some old lady seamstress. She's working for the NAACP. But again, we want to keep seeing her as this old lady. And I felt like it was very important to, especially for our kids, to show them the power that's in. And it's the end of the book. She says, I'm not a politician. She says, I'm not a business leader. I'm just an ordinary person. And I'm proof there's no such thing as an ordinary person.
Near the end of the book, you show this museum with a civil rights exhibition and a picture of Albert Einstein. And was that a secret code? Because that's your next book?
Not only is it a secret code, you have no idea how many secret codes we've hidden in these books.
Are there?
There are. They're all throughout the books. In fact, in Amelia Earhart, in I Am Abraham Lincoln, there's always a hint of who's next if you have to find them hidden, but that's just the beginning of it. We've literally hidden, look in the billboards, look on the license plates, look, we've had fun. The artist actually, you'll notice in some panels, there's a bald man with glasses in the background.
Yes.
That looks remarkably like me. So the artist has the artist has turned me into Where's Waldo is basically what he's done.
Right.
But the goal, yes, that is why Albert Einstein's there. And our real goal is, as you can tell, is not just to do I Am Rosa Parks or I Am Abraham Lincoln or I Am Amelia Earhart. We're doing, as you said at the start, I Am Albert Einstein next. Then we do I Am Jackie Robinson. And the goal is not just one book, is we want to help parents and grandparents build a library of real heroes for their kids. To me, look around. We're a country starving for heroes today. And to me, if we can give our kids real heroes, your nieces, your nephews, your grandkids, that's the best gift you can give them.
I hope you don't stop there.
No, we're not. In fact, we just got word, I can announce here, the publisher just asked for 6 more books. So we're expanding not just as the start of 6, but we're now going to 12. My goal is to do 6,600. I want to do it all over it because there are so many great heroes out here. There's so many wonderful heroes. So we want to do George Washington and Martin Luther King. We want to do Helen Keller, Lucille Ball. There's a whole list of people we want to do.
All right, let's see. Do we want to talk to Dennis in Hollywood? Is that ready? Okay, Dennis in Hollywood, I guess, wants to talk to you, Brad. Hi, Dennis. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to make the distinction between what the author said about, and by the way, I watch you on television all the time, and I'm a great fan of yours, but I wanted to make the distinction between what you said about, great people having trials and tribulations in their lives and them not being born like that. Yes, you can, make that distinction, but to me, the simple fact is people like Faraday or Einstein or Thomas Jefferson, they were born great. I mean, it was in their DNA. It was in their mind when they came out of the womb,
I'll tell you this. I appreciate you watching, Dennis, but I will respectfully disagree with you because there are many people who are born with great skills but never get the chance to express it. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York. And I'll tell you just from my own experience is when my dad lost his job at 40 years old, he decided to move here to Miami, Florida. He had no job. We had no place to live. He had $1,200 to his name. And my parents gave a fake address so I could go to the local wealthy public school. And because I went, to Highland Oaks Middle School and North Miami Beach Senior High School, the best schools in the area at the time, I suddenly was the first in my family who got to go to college. And without that moment, I have a totally different life. I look back at my friends who lived in Brooklyn. None of them went to the schools that I went to. None of them got the chances that I got. And it was all because of that, whether it's, you know, whatever you believe in, whether it's God or dumb luck or, you know, karma, we got a chance that I never would have had. And to me, look at Albert Einstein. The story about Albert Einstein is his father, when he's 5 years old, gives him a compass. And when he looks at that compass as a five-year-old, Albert Einstein says he knows that he sees the compass is always mysteriously pointing north. And he knows because of that, he says, for the first time he realizes that the universe has rules. It has unwritten rules that nobody knows. But to me, what if he doesn't get that compass that day? He later in life, when he's a teenager, gets a math book that someone comes and brings to him and introduces math to him way earlier than he should have. What if that person never gives it to him? And to me, all those dominoes that luckily fall his way, could he achieve great things? Sure. But does he achieve the exact life if he doesn't have it all laid out in that way? I just don't believe that. I think there are too many people I know who don't get a chance.
Okay, Dennis, thanks so much for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
Okay. David in Miami. Hi.
Hi,
there.
Hi. I just wanted to say that whatever awards there are out there, there just aren't enough to give you for what you're doing. I think what you're doing is absolutely amazing, just from the few minutes I've heard on this radio show. You got to keep doing it. I mean, presidents, musicians, anything and everything that could inspire children. I mean, this is awesome. But it's not just for children. It's good for adults, too, to learn stuff. It's just fantastic how you made these people accessible.
Right. I mean, that I appreciate it. That's the best. You know, I will always say the one thing that I'm proud of, and I think it's because of where I come from. I think it's because of what my parents gave me. And that is, you know, my dad was an insurance salesman who just loved to talk, and my mom was a salesperson who loved to talk. And it's you have to talk to people in a way that they'll appreciate and understand these people. And what we do is we suddenly overload you with facts. We give you dates. We say when the Civil War is. We say he freed the slaves. But we tell you nothing about the person. We just tell you their achievements. And we all know that what is far more interesting is the person. I can tell you, you know, one of my favorite heroes locally, I got to tell this story, is a guy named Bobby Flam. There's a soul food restaurant named Jumbo's in Miami. And in the early 60s, Jumbo's, like every restaurant in Miami, almost every restaurant, if you were black, they wouldn't serve you through the front door. You had to go around the side. And when my father-in-law, Bobby Flam, took over the restaurant, he said, these are rules for an uncivilized time. So he hired 3 black employees. And soon after that, 30 of his white employees walked out the door and quit. But what I love is Jumbo's right there became a civil rights landmark. And to this day, there's only 3 restaurants in Miami that are known as James Beard Award classics. There's
still
Joe
there.
Stone Krebs. Joe Stone Krebs is one. Versailles, the first Cuban restaurant. And my family's restaurant, Jumbo's. To this day, you can still go to Jumbo's and get the best fried chicken and shrimp you'll ever have. And what I love the most about it is not that. It's that for all those years, Jumbo's looked out for its community. And when there were race riots in Miami and everything was burned and lit on fire, nobody touched Jumbo's. Because for all those years, Jumbo's looked out for its community. And as a result, the community looked out for it.
Thanks so much for calling, Dave.
Awesome.
Go ahead.
Sure. Well, I was just saying, the everyday heroes, too, the policemen, firemen, and soldiers, you know, our kids need to start emulating those people, too. And it's just nobody until now has seemed to care. And I just wanted to thank you for caring enough to make real-life people heroes to our kids.
No, thank you. That's what I am, Rosa Parks, and I am Abraham Lincoln. That's what it's about. And trust me, I really do want to get to those everyday heroes, too. I want to do 600 of these books.
Do it.
Okay, David, thanks so much for your call.
Sure.
Okay. Brad, we were talking before the program. I read that City Year Miami promo for years here at WLRN, but I never knew about your affiliation with it. Tell us about City Year.
Yeah, so years ago when I was working in Boston, my first job, a guy named Eli Siegel, my first mentor, said to me, he was helping this organization, City Year. I didn't know. I said, what is City Year? And he said, oh, they changed the world. And I said, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. What does that mean? But what I love is he meant it. And what City Year is, it puts kids age 17 to 24 years old as mentors in some of the neediest public schools. And for years, my wife and I used to send money to Washington, D.C. We used to love to support it. And when we first moved back to Miami a decade ago, we said, why are we doing that? Why are we sending our money away? We need that here in Miami. And we brought my wife and myself and a woman named Wendy Spencer with the governor's office, helped us start City Year Miami. With Superintendent Alberto Carvalho, it has grown from what we started with, I think it was 8 kids, to now over 200 kids in some of the neediest high schools and public schools here in Miami. And I love that there are kids every day. They're there before the teachers get there. They're there right after the last student leaves. And they're saying, you know what? If you don't show up today, they'll call you and say, where were you today? And these kids in some of these schools, they go, what do you mean? What do you mean, where was I? No one's ever cared that I was absent.
Right.
And suddenly what the idea is that city, you know, we say, where's your college year? Where's your grad school years? We want everyone to say, where was your city year? And City Year Miami provides some of the best young leaders that I've ever seen.
You know, this is a theme throughout your life, is finding role models.
Listen, it's my belief that ordinary people change the world, right? I believe as much in a young 11-year-old fighting against a boy on roller skates as I do with a City Year member in our red jackets. And that's why, to me, that belief that you don't have to do something extraordinary. All you got to do is help one person, be kind to one person. And it even goes to the superhero books I work on. You know, I work on Superman. But to me, the best part of the story is not Superman. The best part of the story is Clark Kent. And you want to know why? Because we're all Clark Kent. We all know what it's like to be boring and ordinary and wish we'd do something incredibly beyond ourselves. But the news is, we all can. Go help one person, be kind to one person. That's the answer.
Warren in Delray wanted to talk to you. Warren? Oh, okay. He's not there.
Lost Warren.
Okay. We can't talk to Warren. What's on tap for us politically, thriller-wise?
Yeah, no, thank you for letting me plug away. So the next thriller, I'll tell you in order, we do Albert Einstein comes out in September.
Right.
I Am Jackie Robinson is in January. And then in June will be the next thriller, which is called The President's Shadow. So I did a book called The Fifth Assassin, which was about a serial killer who's recreating the crimes of all the presidential assassins from John Wilkes Booth all the way to Lee Harvey Oswald. Now we'll do The President's Shadow, which will be the sequel to that. And I'm basically trying to finish a draft now. And they said to me, you can't leave. You can't do any more interviews. You need to finish this draft. And they said, I'm not joking. This is true. And you can ask them. You know, they said, can you do Topical Currents? And I said, I will be there because it's my family's favorite show. I will be there. So if the next book does not make deadline, I
will know
blame
why.
You,
you can blame me. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, Brad Meltzer, it has been a real pleasure. Oh, Warren wants to talk to you about the bus. What bus? Okay. We just have a second, Warren. Okay, you're on with Brad.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you, Bonnie. What a great show. And oh, by the way, Jackie Robinson, what a great hero. Rosa Parks is a real heroine of mine. And being into collectibles, it came to my attention that the very bus in which she showed her more famous defiance, you pointed out that she did on other occasions. I understand, by the way, she was in close conjunction with the Reverend Dr. King, another great hero. That very bus was put up for auction eventually, not a couple of years back, as a great historical collector's item. And then, of course, last year, there was that wonderful stamp with Rosa Parks on it and big letters, Courage, on there, which I was very proud to buy and to put on my important mail. Thank you very much for a great program again today. And if Joe is listening, Joe, Lord bless you. Please get well soon.
Thank you, Warren.
Thank you, Warren.
Well, Brad, best-selling fiction, nonfiction author, host of Decoded, airs on the History Channel. We've been talking about his series, Ordinary People Change the World. It's a children's book series, but I really say it's for adults as well. And the latest of which is I Am Rosa Parks. They're all illustrated by Christopher Eliopoulos. And we wish you the best, and thank you for everything you're doing. It's great.
Thank you, Bonnie. Oh, I love being here. You have no idea.
Oh, thank you. We'll have you back again soon.
I appreciate it.
When the next one comes out.
I appreciate it. Einstein, wait till you see the Einstein stories. They are incredible.
I'm looking forward to it. Okay, thanks so much. Food and Dining is next.
The mission of the Miami-Dade Medical Reserve Corps is to pre-identify, train, credential, and support dedicated medical and non-medical professional volunteers for an all-hazard emergency response in Miami-Dade County. Details about becoming a volunteer at miamidademrc.org.
We're funded by listeners like you and by TMS Treatment Centers of America, offering a non-invasive treatment for depression without the use of medications, anesthesia, or sedation. Information on the center is available at tmscenterofamerica.com.
This is Ted Gross with the Night Train. Sunday night, we bring back the Cabaret Review, American Rhapsody, George Gershwin to the World. A sophisticated feature I know you'll enjoy. It's with K.T. Sullivan and Mark Nadler. Please join us Sunday at 8 p.m. on WLRN, WKWM, and WLRN.org.
You can visit the Mel Fisher Maritime Museum and discover a world of amazing journeys. Atocha treasure, Caribbean pirates, horrific slave ships, science, and shipwrecks. The Mel Fisher Maritime Museum in Key West. Details at melfishermuseum.org. We're rich in history. Brought to you by the Monroe County Tourist Development Council.
Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with you. Well, I'm stealing your thunder, Linda. Mango season is upon us. It's a time many of us look forward to every year in South Florida, and it's a program that we definitely relish every year. And licking her lips and joining us is Cordon Bleu chef, author, syndicated columnist, and our friend, Linda Gassenheimer. Welcome, Linda.
You can never steal my thunder, Bonnie. That's nice true. To be with you. But if you were in the studio now, the aroma is fabulous.
But perfume, perfume.
Perfume with this wonderful, wonderful mangoes. And the trees are filled now. You know, Bonnie, there's nothing I love more than a warm mango that's just been picked off the tree. It's just so
I agree with you.
Juicy and wonderful. And our guests today are here to tell us about the types of mangoes we find in our backyards, the best eating mangoes, and the new ones coming in from Colombia. Dr. Richard Campbell is Director of Horticulture at Fairchild Tropical Garden. Welcome, Richard Campbell.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for bringing up these mangoes. And also with us is Norris Ledesma. She's the curator of tropical fruits at Fairchild Garden. Welcome, Norris.
Thank you so much.
Great to have you with us. And of course, we'd love to have all of you with us. Give us a call. Is your backyard overloaded with fruit? What do you want to know? Some advice on what to do with it?
Bring it here. I can tell you what to do with it.
Wait. You could, only if you share, Bonnie.
I will.
Okay. Call us. 800-743-9576. 800-743-WLRN.
Email is radio@WLRN.org. And we think it's working. It was not working a few minutes ago. Or it hasn't been, but try it, radio@WLRN.org, or tweet us at Topical Currents.
Okay, and also, of course, with us is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype, and you can read Fred's wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column that is in today's Miami Herald, and you can also read his wine column in today's Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, here's a tip about mangoes. If you have a mango tree and it's dropping mangoes on the ground, don't mow under the mango tree. I have coated my ankle so many times. But anyway, then
did
I go
you
inside
tell us what
and
we
I
were
figure
drinking?
Out what kind of wine to drink with mangoes.
Okay.
Is there such a thing as mango wine?
Yes.
Oh, we'll find out about that, I'm
yes.
sure. I'm sure.
More later on that.
Yeah. Okay. Richard Campbell, how's the mango crop this year?
You know, this year, I say this a lot, but this year we'll probably never duplicate the year we have in mangoes. We have more varieties. The quality's better. The color's better. Everything is better. I think I'm just going to have to die now because it's never going to get it right again.
Don't die.
It's amazing, though. It truly is amazing this year.
Wow. So
why is that?
It was the perfect weather conditions. We had cold that came on a waning moon as the moon was shrinking. and that causes a better bloom, and the bloom was perfectly timed. It rained a little during bloom, but not too much. And then we had warm days and cool nights, and the fruit are big, they're beautiful, they're good flavored, they're not too badly diseased, so it's just beautiful.
Wow. And we've got a crop here in the studio. Let's talk about that. There's so many varieties. Norris, what are the common ones that we find in the supermarket and then the ones that are growing in our backyard?
Here in Miami, we have very commonly Hayden. But I consider Hayden a wonderful mango, but it's the grandpa. It's the mango that has been developed for so many years, and we are ready for a new generation of mangoes, and we have them now at Fairchild Tropical Garden. So we
when
have
you say a new generation of Hayden?
A new generation of Hayden and others.
Wow, and you've got one in front of you, I think. Yes.
I have Malika in front of me. It's a mango from India.
That one was so sweet. It's really wonderful.
It's delicious. It's very appealing for the majority of people because it's also spicy. It has the perfect balance, in my opinion. And it makes a beautiful tree. It's small, produces very well here in South Florida. Everybody should have a Malika tree in their backyard.
But not just one. Oh, come on now. You got to have at least 20 trees in your backyard.
What about on their terrace if they live in an apartment?
We have a choice for those two. So we have condo mangoes. And that
really?
Will be, yeah, then you can plant it in a container. You can have it in 25 gallon. And then if you are moving finally to a house, so you can take it with you. That will be Fairchild. And the other one will be Manilita, Nilom, Koshal. So we have several options for everybody.
Well, now you're going to be selling mango trees at Fairchild during the festival?
Yes, we will have 1,200 trees.
For sale. And that's going to be next weekend, July?
July 12th and 13th from 9 a.m. to 4:30.
Get there early. Let me just tell you. Because it'll be wonderful tastings. We've got some more here, and I want to just talk about a few of the ones that you've brought. Where should we go? I've got
Frances Hargrave.
Oh, Hargrave.
She's actually a woman from South Miami, and that's a kit seedling. And it's a wonderful mango, and she's always been very proud of that mango. It's a delicate flavor. It's a very nice mango.
I tasted that one. It had a little coconut taste to it.
Yeah, it does.
It?
Yeah.
Doesn't
well,
it, I mean?
Yeah. I'm tasting it now. Mmm. It does.
Doesn't it?
It does. And then I have a Malika here. And now what is that one?
I was mentioning.
That's the
you.
One you were mentioning. Yeah. Mm. And then what's the one you just ate?
Glen. Glen is an old Florida favorite, named for Roscoe Glen, who used to take them to all the old mango forums. We all grew up eating Glens. Very beautiful fruit, very South Florida.
Yeah, it is.
Not too strong.
No.
Not too. It's kind of a beginner's mango, you know? it just doesn't do it for me anymore. I need more flavor.
You need more.
Yeah.
And this next one is sweet something, sweet heart or sweet.
That was Vallenato. That's one of the mangoes from Colombia.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Colombia because this year, each year you feature a different year at the festival, a different country, sorry. And so this year it's Colombia. And you are from Colombia. So this must be an exciting year for you, Norris.
Yes, I am.
Is it more exciting because of what's happening Saturday?
Friday. It's Friday.
No, it's tomorrow. That's right. Yeah. What am I talking about? I keep thinking July 4th is Friday. Okay, tomorrow they're playing Brazil, aren't they?
That's going to be a difficult one.
That's going to be a difficult match.
Okay, but we're going to
talk about London.
Mangoes here. Maybe if we sent them some mangoes, they'd be all right.
Okay.
So we will have Vallenato during the weekend. Probably many people are very familiar with that name.
Say it again.
Vallenato, which is a song and is also a music type, but it's we name a mango after Vallenato. It's from the Atlantic coast in Colombia. I grew up with that fruit and also with azúcar, which is the one that I have in my
hand. That's a little tiny one. There's so many different shapes and sizes in mangoes.
Absolutely. And azúcar is like sugar. It's like sugar cane. It's extremely sweet. Any Colombian that is listening the radio today has memories with this mango. It grows in every backyard, and you just mash it up, make a little bite it in the end, and just squeeze it and enjoy
just
it.
Suck the juice out of it.
It's just delicious.
Well, you know, talking about opening up the mangoes and all. Now, Richard comes here every year, and he has this amazing knife that he carves up these mangoes in no time at all. So, Richard, for those people who don't have your knife or skills, what's the best way to open up a mango?
The best way to open up a mango is laid on a counter, and it will find its level. What it does is it rolls over, and the seed is actually in a plane with the table.
So horizontal.
It's horizontal.
It'll become horizontal.
So when you pick it up with your hand, you turn it towards you, and then you peel the cheek. You peel off one side of the skin, and then I cut that cheek off, and then I turn it over. I peel the other side, and I cut that off, just leaving the seed left over. Then I, of course, chew the whatever flesh is left on the seed.
That's the best part.
And then I cut up the flesh into normally. I'm a kind of a stickler of. I like to have wedges. I don't like cubes.
Sorry, but that sounds a little complicated for me.
No, it's not complicated.
Yes. You know, the best way to eat a mango is get messy. That's the best way.
I was going to say, Richard, I've heard you say this, how to do this every year, and every year I go home and totally mess it up. So I think that you need to put this like on a little instructional audio.
He's peeling it with this very, very sharp knife. Now, most of us would think of peeling with a potato peeler, which you can't do on this, and with a knife. I'll tell you how I do it. I take the mango and I stand it on its fat end, stand it up straight. And then you can carve each side down each side of the pit. And there is happens to be it's almost like an apple core that you can just cut through. I've never been able to do it with that. You have to be really strong. So once I've got the two halves, it still has the skin on it. And at that point, I take a knife and run it around it, and I can come out with the whole half, or even just a spoon, just spoon it up. Or you can just eat it with a spoon.
Well, Linda and I once did a video. I'm just wondering, Paul, do you have any whole mangoes left there?
Yeah.
You do? Mm-hmm. Paul, can we do a video of Dr. Campbell opening up a mango for us?
Sure.
And we put it on the website?
Post it up later, sure.
Because that'll be good. Then I can refer to that every time. Okay?
Perfect.
Okay. All right.
Well, let's go to Michael in Hialeah. He's on the air. Michael, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 25-foot mango tree in my backyard, and I'm hesitant to use spray fertilizers since they usually stain concrete and it's such a large tree. I have kind of like a two-part question. One is, what in-soil fertilizer do you recommend? And I understand from the Fairchild website that you discourage nitrogen fertilizers. And the second part of the question is, do you recommend cutting off or trimming the tree's top to encourage horizontal growth for a tree like mine? I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Michael.
Absolutely. One of the best recommendations to have a healthy tree is pruning. If you prune your tree since the beginning, so you won't have that many problem in the end of the age of your tree. If it's too late, so you still can do it. The other question was about fertilizing. Fertilizing, we recommend you to use no nitrogen, so you can buy something like 0050. Nitrogen will reinforce the growth of the mango instead of pushing them to bloom, so it won't be recommended to do it.
Okay, that answers that question. We have half a minute, Diego in Miami. Hi, Diego, you're on the air. We just have about a half a minute.
Hi. I would like to know about the Celestial series of mangoes. They had released it like a year ago and the year before, and they had like the Martian Pride and Big Saturn. But I would just like to know more about these mangoes and what should we expect for this year, or this Mango Festival coming up this weekend?
Okay, thank you, Diego.
Thank you, Diego.
Just a quick answer.
These are mangoes that are new new varieties that are new selections that have been made, and they were actually named the Celestial Series because their flavor is out of this world. And so they will be, you will see some of these being introduced now by Fairchild over the next few years in the Mango Festival.
And so we'll get to taste some in the Mango
Festival. We'll have them for tasting and also for sale from the fruit market.
Okay, let me just say something. Go early.
Again, when is it? The 12th and 13th?
The 12th and the 13th.
Okay.
We're going to take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, talking about mangoes with Dr. Richard Campbell and Norris Ledesma from Fairchild Tropical Garden. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we've been talking about mango madness with Dr. Richard Campbell. He's the director of horticulture at Fairchild Tropical Garden, and Norris Ledesma, curator of tropical fruit at Fairchild. They've been giving us tips on how to grow, pick, eat, mostly eat, mangoes. The festival is scheduled for July 12th through 13th, and you can find more information about it at fairchildgarden.org. There's no S on garden, fairchildgarden.org. And according to Dr. Campbell, it's the best year that he's ever seen. And if you want to have the best mangoes you've ever had, this is the year, so you better get on out there. Meanwhile, it's dinner in minutes time. And if you happen to have a lot of mangoes on hand, I've got a mango recipe for you. It's going to be sweet, it's going to be spicy, and it's going to be great for this 4th of July weekend. Pan-roasted chicken with chunky mango salsa and hot peanut rice. So for the salsa, you make mango cubes, and even though Dr. Campbell says he doesn't like the cubes, cut out that mango, make it into cubes, place it in a bowl, add some onion, some jalapeno pepper, a little ground cumin, some lime juice. And then some chopped cilantro. So then I take boneless chicken breasts and I flatten them and I cook them maybe about 3 minutes aside and just serve it with the mango on top. So easy and delicious. The hot peanut rice, I saute some onions and rice for a couple of minutes. I add some water and I simmer for about 15 minutes. Then I sprinkle the peanuts with a little cayenne pepper, and the heat is up to you, and mix it into the cooked rice. The complete recipe. Unfortunately, my website seems to be down, but we're going to put the recipe on the WLRN website,
okay.
So it'll be there. And then if you want another 4th of July recipe, I've got some buffalo chicken legs with blue cheese salad in today's Miami Herald. And Bonnie's eyes just lit up when she heard about that. So please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred, are we drinking? Or should I ask?
Yes, we are. Actually, several years ago, Richard was kind enough to invite me to the Mango Festival to give a tasting seminar on what wines would go well with mangoes. And this was a very fun study because it turned out that mango dishes vary wildly, so they call for a wild variety of wines. Green mango slaw, and I love that slaw, it's made with unripe mangoes, cilantro, and red pepper flakes, so it's tart and acidic. And it pairs well with a crisp, lean Sauvignon Blanc, or maybe a steely Spanish Albarino would be nice. Something like chicken salad with mango chunks or roast salmon with mango salsa are kind of savory dishes, so they go well with big, buttery, oaky Chardonnays. And then you have mango pudding. Oh, this is wonderful. A super sweet, silky, smooth Chinese dessert made with mangoes and sweetened condensed milk. It's one of the sweetest dishes on earth. So it goes well with a sweet dessert wine like Sauterne, which has the late harvest wine with Sauvignon Blanc and Semillon.
So, Fred, I want to know if you made all these recipes and had the wine with them. That's the important part.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. I knew that.
And I'm going to do it again, too.
Okay.
Also, you could drink a red wine with mangoes. That mango pudding would go very well with Bracchetto d'Acqui, which is a very sweet, sparkling red dessert wine from northern Italy. That's a nice combination.
Boy, that sounds good. That's one of my favorites. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Mm. And now for something completely different. Let's talk a little bit about wines for the 4th of July. As you know, Americans by law are required to cook their 4th of July meal outdoors over an open fire or charcoal or gas.
By law.
Yeah, I think it's in the Constitution. But if you make the mandatory grilled cheeseburger, steak, or barbecued ribs, I'd pair it with a good old American Red Zinfandel. It's very patriotic. If you're grilling veggies, white Sauvignon Blanc would be nice. And if you get brave and grill your dessert, like pineapples or peaches or bananas, a perfect pairing is the sweet mango wine from the Schnebly Fruit Winery in the Redland. And not surprisingly, that tastes like mangoes.
Right, so somebody asked early on, you know, do we have any...
I did.
Oh, that's who somebody
that's who that somebody
yeah,
was.
Oh, okay. I knew somebody asked.
Thank you, friend.
They make mango wine there. It was very difficult. They said when they first crush it, it looks more like baby food than anything you'd make into wine. You have to do a lot of really hard filtering with it, but they soldiered on and they got it right, and it's very nice.
Okay, and that's available here in Miami.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, you.
I think Publix even carries a line of their wines.
Yeah, I think so. And you mentioned the green mango slaw, and earlier on before the show, Norris was telling me all about green mangoes and how. In Colombia, they use a lot of green mangoes. So what are some of your ideas about it?
Oh, with green mangoes, we can make a full dinner because you can have almost gazpacho with green mangoes. You can blend it.
How do you do that?
You blend it. You know, one of the problems cooking with ripe mangoes is because you lose completely the flavor. But with green mangoes or unripe mangoes, you don't have that problem. You can.
Aren't they too hard? They're solid.
Yeah, but you can mix it with water,
uh-huh.
And that will do the job. And you can use lemon juice or orange juice, and then mix it with other ingredients. You can make it salty or sweet if you want it. We eat green mangoes like a snack, just with salt and lime.
So it doesn't have a mango flavor. It's just very acid. I think, Richard, you were mentioning that.
It tastes like green mango, so...
Yeah. It has a mango flavor. It just has a green mango flavor. It's a lot different. It's starchy.
Mm-hmm.
But very nice.
I have a question. How can we... Everybody today in Miami has thousands of mangoes, but then the season's going to be over. Can we freeze them or can them, or what can we do to keep them for the winter?
You can definitely freeze them. You can cut them up first, any way you prefer.
Don't freeze them whole.
Don't freeze them whole. Mm-hmm. You can also dry them. Dried mangoes is one of the very best, dehydrated mangoes. You can also freeze green mango, too. But again, cut it up first and freeze it as like a julienne's kind mm-hmm. of idea.
So you could dry it and make mango chips almost?
You do. And actually in India, they make amchar, which is dried green mango. And then they grind it up and they use it as a spice over everything.
Wow.
Okay. So... And we were talking about mango pie that you said it's almost like an apple pie.
For that one, I will recommend green mangoes. So you make like an apple pie, and you just make the starches and cook it and put it over. So you won't need much time to put it in the oven because you will lose the flavors too. So I will recommend it to do it a very short time.
That's an interesting point because a lot of tropical fruits, when they're cooked, you lose their flavor. I think passion fruit's about the only one I can think of that doesn't. So somebody had asked me about a mango pie, and I said, well, the best thing is to have a cooked pastry shell, make a pastry cream and put some mango puree into it. Then you take just sliced mangoes and put it over the top and put a glaze on that. So you get the real flavor of the mangoes.
You know, one thing I do is to put mangoes in the blender and blend them up, put them in ice cube trays, and then in the middle of December, I get those out and make mango daiquiris.
Mm. I'm getting a theme here. I'm picking up on a theme.
Not from Fred.
Well, it's really been a very, very tasty week. We've been talking with Dr. Richard Campbell. He's Director of Horticulture at Fairchild Tropical Garden. And Norris Ledesma, she's curator of tropical fruit there. They've been with us every year, and we just love welcoming them back. The Mango Festival at Fairchild, July 12th through 13th. I think the doors opened at 9:30, isn't it? Yes, they're saying yes. Get there at 8:30, I think, because there'll be a line. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us, both of you.
Thank you.
And
my
for
pleasure.
This wonderful display of mangoes here. Fred Tasker, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
Bonnie Berman.
Yes.
You ate well today.
Yes, thank you, so much. Thank
Next
you,
week, I'm going to Richard be bringing you Norris. My favorite finds right. from the Fancy Food Show. I've just come back from New York.
Oh, that's wonderful always so much fun.
Yes, it'll be a whole hour.
Okay.
From 1 to 2. Join me then. I'm Linda Gassenheimer.
And we have a little email from Evan that says, Tom Robbins' general advice, if it's sloppy, eat it over the sink for your mangoes. That is our program for today. We thank you for spending your time with us. Our producer is Richard Eyes with technical direction. From our online producer, Paul Leary, we have free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org. And more information, links, and photos at the Topical Currents Facebook page. That's facebook.com/topicalcurrents. And hopefully we'll have that Dr. Richard Campbell opening a mango in the right way. And tomorrow at this time, join Ed Bell for another edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We return on Monday with author, lecturer, attorney, and political activist Ralph Nader. Richard Ives will speak with Nader about his latest book, Unstoppable, The Emerging Left-Right Alliance to Dismantle the Corporate State. Bonnie Berman joining you and sending best wishes to Joseph Cooper. Please stay tuned for Here and Now, up next from NPR News, and have a great day and a great 4th of July.